Our readings this weekend are about conversion, about changing the direction of our lives and going more in the direction that God wants us to, rather than the direction that from time to time we kind of wander off or decide for ourselves. We're all called to conversion. We're called at different moments in our lives and with our lives to follow the path the Lord sets out rather than the path you or I might always happen to think is the best one to do. And it's hard. Conversion is a lifelong process. Now, we see in some people's lives that their lives were, you know, kind of such a mess anyway that they had these major conversion experiences, and from that moment on, they followed the Lord. Okay? I'll give you two examples. St. Augustine, for one. Okay? If you want to read about his great conversion experience, you can read the Confessions of St. Augustine. He had a pretty racy life in the first half of his life. And then somehow he talks about that moment when God's love flooded his heart and light filled his soul. And from that moment on, he changed and went about life in a different way. It's always interesting to read. I will tell you that the translation of the Confessions makes all the difference in the world. So if you start into it and you don't like and it's not taking you anywhere right away, find a different translation, okay? But it's a great read, and really, I think, pretty fascinating, looking at this conversion of this great man in the history of the church. The other one is a little bit, I think, more readable, because it was written in English, and that was a 20th century person, Thomas Merton. Seven Story Mountain is a phenomenal autobiography. He writes about his spiritual conversion. Merton was 16 when he was orphaned. And then around about 18 or so, he becomes a communist and an atheist. And then again, somewhere around his early 20s, he suddenly sees the Lord and the Lord calling him to live a deeper life. And so he becomes a believer, he becomes a Christian, he's baptized Catholic, you know, and starts moving through his life. And eventually he's hired by the New York Times because he's such a good writer. That's why I say I know this one's a much easier read, okay? But as he writes, about 3 years after he's writing for the New York Times, he suddenly feels like he's called to the monastery. And so he packs his bag and he takes off for Kentucky and he becomes a monk. And fortunately for the rest of us, he wrote then for the rest of his time in the monastery about that continuing conversion in his life, where he had to turn and follow a path to follow Jesus. These two, you know, major conversions are not the way most of us go about life, okay? Most of us don't get that one big moment where suddenly it's like we got to leave the whole life behind and change course and then suddenly follow God. For most of us have been believers from the time we were little. You know, if I had you raise your hands, well, I'll just do it just so you can see. But how many of you have been following the Lord since you were a little kid? That's most of us, okay? But some people had those conversion moments somewhere in the face of life where they went, whoa, I got to be going a completely different direction. For us, it has to happen differently. For us, we have to remember that conversion is a daily thing. It happens minute by minute. It happens inch by inch rather than the whole thing all at once. We're called to conversion all the time. Is your life always what Jesus wants it to be? Mine certainly isn't. That's why we have to take a big deep breath from time to time and take that big deep breath and say, okay, I'm going to make the mini conversion now, today. Because the Lord's calling me deeper. The Lord's calling me into this in a deeper and more intentional way. And that, my friends, I think can happen every single day of our lives if we allow ourselves to hear what God's saying to us. I'm going to give you two examples today. The first is in terms of prayer, okay? So we come here to Mass, and when we come here to Mass, the beauty of the whole thing is that you guys can follow the whole thing without any book in front of you, okay? We got it all memorized, all right? We know exactly what we're going to say next. But the danger of that is that sometimes we can get on an automatic pilot and just coast our way through the Mass. You know? If you don't like what I'm saying, you can dial up a different channel and go to your happy place. Okay? And you know, and while sometimes, you know, if you do that, I'm going to tell you what I was just telling, I always tell my college students. And that is, if you need to leave my homily and figure out a different channel, you go right ahead. But that doesn't mean you just get to, like, disappear. It means then you got to preach a sermon to yourself on these readings. And then you'll see how easy it is. Okay? But preach the sermon to yourself. If my words are leaving you flat, the words of the gospel, I guarantee you, are never going to leave you flat. And the words of the gospel are never going to not challenge you. If we're truly open to conversion. And so with that prayer, how do we dig deeper? How do we pray the prayers a little bit more intentionally? How do we not get on automatic pilot? How do we say them really truly from our hearts when we say them? Even things that we said a jillion times, like the Lord's Prayer. How do we dig deeper? Or perhaps you're one of those people that prays in the morning and prays at night. So maybe you give the Lord 5 minutes in the morning and 5 minutes at night. Here's where the conversion comes in. Is that enough? About all the minutes in the day, is 5 minutes in the morning and 5 minutes at night enough? Or could it be the Lord? Could the Lord be calling us to more? Could the Lord be calling us deeper? Could the Lord from time to time want us to run out of words so that we just have to look him in the eye? Stare at God for a while and let God stare at us. What's God saying to you in your prayer? And if you don't know, well, then maybe spending more time doing it, or maybe using less words, might be the way to go about it. The bottom line to the whole thing is that we're never, never going to exhaust a life of prayer. We can always go deeper. We can be called to more conversion. Take that big deep breath and take the next step in faith and in prayer. There's another one. Now this one's not going to be quite as comfortable for us, okay? Because this one really gets us to look at all kinds of other things that are attached to it. And this is the issue of how we treat each other, especially people who are different than we are. How do we treat those people? Because while I'm going to bet that probably most of you in here would never be mean or rude to somebody who was of a different race, a different color, a different orientation, while I would bet that that's probably true, probably nobody'd be intentionally mean or nasty or rude, I would hope. And if you are, snap out of it and straighten out. Okay? But what happens when jokes are made? Do we let the joke go unchallenged? Or do we dig a little bit deeper and say, wait a minute, is that really the way they're supposed to be treating each other? If we're going to be other Christs? Is that really the way that we should talk about each other? When was the last time we said something like that? When was the last time we stopped sometimes that humor that's really not so funny, but that makes us uncomfortable that we don't want to say something? When was the last time we did that? Let's take it even a couple steps further in terms of our national dialogue. What about the death penalty? Have you ever stopped to think about the fact that the death penalty affects more people of color than it does anyone else? And that's tied up in some ways with a bit of systemic racism. Now again, this is not the racism we're talking about where I'm mean to somebody on the street. But this is the kind of racism that's kind of built into the system that basically makes sure that even though, while our black brothers and sisters are only this part of the population, they're this part of the people who wind up with the death penalty. That ought to bother us. That ought to show us that something's not right, even in the way that the deck is stacked. But does that ever bother us? Do we ever think about it? Do we ever challenge it? And again, Pope Francis has reminded us, and the Catechism teaches us, that the death penalty is not acceptable anyway. When was the last time we wrote a letter? Federal government is now, for the first time since the Second World War, it's in the execution business. And have any of us said anything to our federal officials about trying to get it stopped? Or to say the fact that we don't like that? Or that we especially don't like the fact that they're trying to garner votes by killing people? With our tax dollars? I might add. Have any of us said anything about any of that? Are we just cruising along? What about that call to more conversion? What about a way to change our lives? What about a way to change the system? You don't like that one? I'll hit you with one more and then I'm going to leave you alone, okay? But what about the issue of immigration, especially for refugees? Now, I know if your neighbor down the street was trying to be conscripted into a gang, and that gang told him, you either join, or you pay us lots of money, or you die, you'd be doing whatever you could to help your friend down the street. So what happens if it's one of our brown brothers and sisters from the southern hemisphere who's knocking on our door and seeking refuge? Because that's exactly what's happening. What would you do as a mom or a dad or a brother or a sister if someone you love was being conscripted against their will and their life was literally on the line? Would you, in effect, slam the door in their face? Now, there are lots of ways to solve that problem. We don't have time during this homily to approach all of that. But what I'm saying is, if our hearts are not moved by that, do you not think that maybe we've got a little conversion to do? Do you think we're really finished turning toward the Lord when there are human beings that are dying because we just want what we want as we want it? Because we're comfortable with that. Not the Lord who calls out to me in my conscience. Not the Lord who calls out to me in my sleep. We want to cry out to God, but wait a minute, that's not fair. But God says to us in very clear terms today, which we really probably didn't like too much, when God says, but wait a minute, is it your ways that are unfair, or rather my ways that are good, and yours are the ones that are messed up? Conversion's not an easy thing. Can we, in the words of the second reading, learn how to care about everybody else's needs as much as we're willing to care about our own? Because that's where that happiness that Paul talks about comes from. It's caring for everybody, not just what I want. Finally, in today's parable, and aren't you about sick of the parables the last few weeks? Because the Lord just keeps smacking us around week after week after week. But I got news for you, they're going to keep coming for a few more, okay? So just buckle up. It's what we got for right now. But in today's parable, which son did the Lord's work and will? I wouldn't answer the question so easily the first. I'd say neither and both. Some thought it was going to be easy from the very beginning. Oh, but now it's not. Some didn't want to do it in the first place. Now that describes my relationship with God, because I always fight with God. Everybody, so many other people have this nice, sweet relationship with God. God whispers in their ear and everything's so sweet and gentle. And God and I wrestle. We wrestle all the time. Because I don't always do what he wants. I don't always want to do what he wants me to do. If it's any consolation, my father used to say the same thing about me. But my mother would say, would you just leave him alone? Because notice he's doing what you asked him to do, even though he's complaining about it the whole time. My mother told the bishop that when I was first ordained. And every bishop has found out since then that that's exactly the way I am. I just want to be in there with the tax collectors and the prostitutes. I just want to be in there with them. Big, messy sinner that I am. But it is going to depend on whether or not I'm willing to open my heart to conversion. And that hurts. But let's ask God to change our minds and to change our hearts wherever they're stubborn. That we can be open to whatever it is that God calls us to.